The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week, on Sunday morning, I spoke about speaking, the practice of speaking, both as a mindfulness practice and how useful it is to pay attention to how we speak, what motivates us to speak, what goes on when we speak, and also the ethics of speaking, what right speech is, and how to evaluate our speech according to what is useful to speak and what's best to avoid. What I'd like to do today is to follow up this with, I think, one of my favorite topics, especially when in relationship to speaking, and that is mindfulness of listening. Maybe listening is more important than speaking sometimes. And there's a wonderful saying from the ancient world that goes something like, God gave us two ears and one mouth, so we'd listen twice as much as we speak. I'm fond of also the fact that in the early Buddhist tradition, the people who were the disciples, direct disciples of the Buddha, were called listeners, listeners or hearers, savakas, shravakas. And probably because they were listening to the Buddha teach, and that's how they became disciples. But I'm kind of inspired by the idea of the value of listening, of some deep listening that can go on. I'm also fond of that in the rules of Saint Benedict, the Italian monastic, Catholic monastic order, they begin, the rules begin apparently with the word, maybe it's Latin or Italian, I don't know which one, but ascolta. Ascolta in Italian means listen. And it's important of listening again. And listening is, you know, has a lot of similarities with mindfulness. We sit down, and one way I've liked for myself to approach mindfulness has been to come up with synonyms for mindfulness, so I don't get stuck in one idea of what it is. And different situations, different these synonyms seem to work. One synonym that was very important for a long time for me was participation. So rather than how to be more mindful of a situation, how to participate more fully in the situation. Because I was a non-participant in certain things. I didn't want to be involved in, especially like working in the kitchen in the monastery. I didn't really see that was real practice. And so then I had to learn that my practice was, let's participate more fully. And the participation kind of idea I got from one of those wonderful serendipitous kind of moments where I was going off to the Tassajara Zen Monastery to be a student there, and they stopped in Carmel. I don't know what they were stopping for, but I went into a little bookstore, and I went to the spiritual shelves, and I randomly pulled down a book, and I opened it randomly. And it was a book by back then he was called Dafrijan. And in there, what he said inside the book, in that one page I opened, was something to the effect that one of the great problems people have is avoiding things, avoiding participating. And so I didn't like the fact that it was worded negatively, so I reworded myself in a more positive way. It's like, how can I participate more fully? And then they put me to work in the kitchen. So I got to practice, you know. So that was one synonym for mindfulness. Another synonym that I found valuable for me is listening as a synonym for mindfulness, to listen deeply. And one of the reasons why listening works for me as a synonym is that listening, there's an active quality to listening and there's a passive quality. Listening, usually you don't try to, most people, you can strain to listen, but most people listen in a much more relaxed way than if you tell them, look. And when the language of looking is used for mindfulness, like look inside yourself, watch your breath, many people translate that into a straining or a separation from their experience. But listening can be much more relaxing and more open, and I think for many people associated with much less control, because you can't really control what you hear, whereas maybe you can kind of try to control what you see, or if you... anyway, so the other way of listening as a synonym for mindfulness, even when it's not literally listening, You know, listening to what's going on inside, listening what's here is very nice. And there's a wonderful story that's sometimes been taught in our tradition that comes from the Indian epic called the Ramayana. And it has to do with Rama, the god Rama. God Rama is walking through the woods with his companions. Rama heard someone call his name. None of his companions could hear anything, but he continued to hear a female voice calling him faintly and distinctly, Ramo, Rama, Rama. He followed the sound until he came to a boulder from which the cry seemed to emerge. Gently, Rama placed his hands upon it. The minute he touched the rock, it began to move and dissolve and transform. Finally, a dignified woman stood before him. Her name was Alaya. A curse had imprisoned her within the stone until someone touched it softly, lovingly. She had been there eons, crying out his name in a voice that only he could hear. So this is a very, I think it's a, you know, very compelling or evocative kind of story or myth because of the way it's symbolic in many ways. One way I say you get a hint of how symbolic it is the woman who's kind of stuck in this rock for a long time. Her name is Alaya. And Alaya in Indic language, in Sanskrit, means home. And so like Himalaya means the home of the snow. And so, you know, her name is home. So where's home? Where do you find home? And is home something that's you've lost touch with? And you have to listen very quietly for your name or something like that, for your true self, to find it, to come home to yourself. What parts of ourselves have become petrified? What parts of ourselves have we lost touch with? What parts of ourselves can no one else hear? Only you can hear. And what parts of ourselves are shy or have a very faint voice that in order for you to hear, you have to get really quiet and listen very carefully. And I believe that some of the deepest and most important parts of who we are, of how we function, what comes out of us, I like to think of it as being shy. And as shy, it means that it's very easy, it kind of pulls away and retreats when it's not safe for it to be there, when we're busy, when we're too active or too loud all around us. And so one of the functions of meditation is to have the quiet and the peace and the sense of inner safety so that which is a shy or quiet within us has a chance to come forth. So what is petrified? What's the boulder that needs to dissolve? And the other thing I like about this story is that you have the boulder. You know, he lovingly put his hands on the boulder. You know, you usually don't think of a boulder as something that's going to be the recipient of our love and our care and our gentleness. You generally put our hands on it. A boulder is this big, heavy rock. Maybe it's an obstacle. Usually people don't find boulders very useful. And so we have things inside of ourselves that maybe are painful or hard or difficult or, you know, or seemingly unimportant. And so part of the function of mindfulness is to pay careful attention to that and not just to be aware of it and know that it's there, but to bring a certain kind of care and kindness, gently hold, as if our attention is like soft hands, put our attention softly on that which may be most hard, most difficult, maybe even most painful within ourselves, and then listen, be there very carefully. So here Rama was hearing, listening to this voice, you know, calling out his name. So we listen. So I like the language of listening quite a bit. And then the question is, you know, how do we listen? If listening is like mindfulness, then some of the qualities of mindfulness come into play when we listen. We offer our attention. We offer kind of a heightened sense of attention, maybe an interest or curiosity. What's going on here? With mindfulness, we learn to pay careful attention without emphasizing, controlling, and fixing what a situation is, but just being present, often we say in a non-reactive way. And so is there a place for, in listening, to listen in a non-reactive way, to develop the capacity to listen in the same way, in the same openness, the same non-reactivity, the same equanimity, as we're developing our mindfulness to pay attention to ourselves in meditation, for example, or in other situations. and to listen to the world around us, to listen to others, to listen to what people have to say. There's a kind of a joke or something I read many years ago of a man who is in therapy, and he's having difficulty with his wife. And so the therapist says, you know, you have to go home and really listen to your wife. So he goes, does that, and he comes back to the therapist and said, you know, I listened to her, and it didn't really help. And then the therapist sent him home again and said, now you have to listen to what she's not saying. So, you know, there's one thing to listen to words, but it's another thing to listen to what's motivating the words, what's behind the words, what the feelings are, what's between the words, to listen to what's not being said. How many marriages involve, or how many partnerships involve, you know, not necessarily secrets, but unwillingness to talk about certain things. Some relationships actually survive because they're, you know, because they have something they don't want to face, they don't talk about. And I don't think that freedom is found by not talking about things. So I think one of the qualities I hope that comes out of Buddhist practice is a willingness to open up, a willingness to talk about what is difficult, and a commitment to stay in there and stay present for that, and not turn away and work through it. I think from my Buddhist practice, I've developed a tremendous appreciation for how everything can be worked through if the commitment to stay present is there and listen and be heard. I've been involved in many conflicts in my life. Some of them I was invited to be part of, in the sense of trying to help out, you know, to help mediate or something. One of the primary things that I've learned about the conflict is how tremendously important it is for people to be heard, everyone to be heard. And I've been involved in conflict when parties were not really fully heard. It seemed to aggravate the conflict, just fueled it even more. And I've been involved sometimes in helping with conflicts where not only was people not heard, but sometimes their concerns were dismissed. And sometimes it's easy to dismiss people when sometimes their concerns don't seem to you to be valid or important. And so, you know, it's kind of pass over. But I think whenever there's conflict, probably people need to be heard first. And some of the bigger conflicts that I've tried to help mediate with, I've seen that just being heard was the big thing that kind of created more peace than anything else. In fact, a person doesn't have to be heard by the person they're in conflict with. I remember I was in the Ethics Council committee, and there was all this conflict in a community, the conflict wasn't being handled very well by that community, and so that I was asked to get involved and help. And so the people who were hurt by what happened, I invited them to come and see me. And we spent a few hours, and they just told me the whole story, what happened. And I listened very respectfully and carefully. And they appreciated so much being heard. And after that, the energy they had and the tension they had around needing to be resolved or to deal with it diminished dramatically. And it didn't go away, but now they were able to go back into it without such a charge of being hurt or being, you know, overly excited because no one was listening. The fact that they were heard by someone was useful. A couple of years ago, I was in Santa Cruz. You know, I don't know what it's called, the main drag in Santa Cruz, main road, where it's kind of a great place to walk. It's, you know, it's a great place to see humanity, and I like it down there. And we were walking down that main street in Santa Cruz, and someone had a table, like a card table, out on the street, and two folding chairs. On the card table, there was a little card, upright card, that said, "Free empathy." And so I looked more carefully. In fact, the person who was offering free empathy was sitting in one chair, and there was someone else sitting in the other chair talking. And what struck me was the person who was offering free empathy, how intently he was listening. That's, you know, he knew how to listen. That's why he could offer empathy. Listening very carefully, really there. Or then the stories that I've heard, probably you've heard them too, of people who have gone to places like Russia or Palestine or different places where there's big conflicts, especially where Americans are involved somehow or other. And they'll sit down in a park with a sign that says, "American willing to listen." And there's a line of people who really appreciate it. And, you know, you know, they'll go, they'll take turns, and they'll tell Americans what, you know, what they feel like they want to say. And I think it's a wonderful offering to offer our ears to people to listen. It's a great thing. So I think there's four principles for good listening. They're called the four A's of listening. And the first is our attention. And attention isn't always easy to come by. And attention, for someone who practices mindfulness, attention, I think we learn, is attention is not only paying attention to the person, the situation, but also paying attention to ourselves. So pay attention very carefully when we get bored or we start spacing out. And probably, I hope that all of you, because this happens to me, that's why I hope it's all of you, are sometimes in conversations and you didn't quite hear what the last sentence was. Is that true, some of you? I'm not the only one. And it's a little bit embarrassing, you know. Can you repeat that, please? But, I find it very interesting to pay attention when there's a boredom or when we space out. Usually it's a sign of something interesting going on rather than something uninteresting. And so it's good to know that. What are the triggers? What are the reactions inside of ourselves as we listen? What happens to us when we listen? To what degree are we willing to let go of control? There's a beautiful, with listening, and careful, attentive listening, there's an interesting interplay between controlling yourself, meaning not to give your impulses and reactivity the upper hand, not to rush forward with your opinions, not to interrupt people, but to be in control of yourself enough that you can be balanced and relaxed and present with your whole being, with your body, just be there. Maybe you don't like the word control, but for now, sense of control of yourself to be there. But I think sense of control in yourself also gives you a sense of power in the situation. It's harder to feel you're a victim of someone talking to you if you feel like you're in control of yourself. And then also there's the other side of it is there's also giving up control in good listening because you don't know what's going to come next. You don't know what the person's going to say. You don't know what has to be listened to. And sometimes you don't know whether it's even useful to listen. I've listened and wondered, is this really useful? The person's going on and on. And what am I offering? What am I doing? This person's talking a lot. But you know, some people have never been listened to before. And it's really, especially, to offer to really carefully listen is a great gift to people who go on and on sometimes. And sometimes it's useful to say that's enough, you know, or can I say something now or whatever. I think many of you know that one of the principles of therapy is after all these years of therapy and training and school and master's and PhD and therapy hours and, all that, the thing the therapist offers the most is listening. The fact that they don't have to listen really well. And it seems to be very healing for many people just to be heard properly. So we offer our attention, and attention involves paying attention to ourselves as well. And the principle I try to do when I'm listening to people is I try to have 50% of my attention on the person I'm listening to and 50% of my attention on myself. And because I think it's so important to stay in touch with what's happening inside of me so I can be a good listener. If I give too much of my attention to the other person, it might seem, logically, that then I'm a good listener, I'm giving all my attention to the person. But I'm actually not listening fully when I do that. I listen more fully when I'm actually also paying attention to myself 50% of the time, what's happening here. So the first A of good listening is attention. The second is to acknowledge what's happening. So to acknowledge to someone else what is, what you hear. People know that you've been listening if you repeat back what you've heard, what's going on. The other is A, which is affection, to listen affectionately with loving kindness, with care. And if you don't like the word affection for all your listening, then part of the maybe affection has an A in it, so that's why it's there. But maybe a better word is empathy. To listen with empathy. To listen with trying to understand the person in some deeper way. Understand what's going on for the person. What's going on behind the words. Someone who goes on and on. Someone who's angry. Someone who's angry with you. Perhaps what's most useful is not that you defend yourself, but you listen with some kind of empathy. You're willing to kind of put yourself in their shoes. What's going on for that person? And listen before you react, before you speak, before you defend yourself. What's happening? And then the last one, is affirmation. So even if you disagree with someone, is there something you can affirm? Is something that you can appreciate in that person? Something you can say, you know, I hear you, and, you know, I don't necessarily agree with everything you said, but I really value how honest you are about saying this. Or I really value the fact that you're letting me know how you feel. Or it's really important that this came out, thank you. Or, you know, you're speaking with a lot of passion. It's great you have so much passion. Or something. I think these qualities of listening, you know, then people really feel like they're being heard and seen and recognized, which I think is the gift of really good listening. So now I want to ask you to participate in this talk like I did last week. And so the question for you is, what are some of the things you can listen to beyond the words that someone says, beyond the obvious meaning of the words that people say? What are some of the, when you listen to someone, what are some of the other things that you can listen to, pay attention to, notice?
Well, I think it's been said that a person's body language and their face and yes, like that.
Something like that?
Yes, I know, it's been said before. Yes. Like that, tone of voice, that much more gets communicated that way than through the actual words.
Yes, so the body language communicates a lot. And usually it's not so dramatic. I apologize for taking the show and tell. Yes, body language is a big thing. It hasn't happened for a long time, but in the first years that I was teaching, I noticed there's a number of people where I guess they were very uncomfortable. Some people are really uncomfortable kind of meeting kind of straight on. And sometimes it's impolite. It's too much to do it. But maybe I was overdoing it. But I would like the idea of really being there for someone and being kind of like, you know, facing them directly. So we were standing, and they would be like 90 degrees to me looking over their shoulders. And I turned around. I walked around them so I could face them. And they turned so they could keep... And one person, I actually walked around 360 degrees. And I don't think the person knew. It was unconscious. So there's the body language said one thing. The Reb Anderson, who's one of the senior teachers at San Francisco Zen Center, I don't know if it's still his practice or his custom, but many years ago, 25 years ago, he said that his way of listening to people, one of the things he does pay attention to their body language, but he kind of takes their body language, how they are, how their posture, as a cue, and he kind of adjusts himself accordingly. So if, because he's usually a very upright, kind of a little bit intimidating guy because he's so straight, but I guess if someone slouches then against the wall, he'll slouch against the wall. Or, you know, he tries to match it so people feel comfortable and there's a kind of resonance that can happen maybe. Thank you, Martha. Someone else? Mark? Next.
What was the question again? What are we listening to? what are we listening to if we're not just listening to the words? Is that the question?
What additional things can you listen to in addition to what the words are? The obvious meaning of the words.
For me, there's a sense of listening to someone's emotional tone, mm-hmm. their feelings, the emotional body that is there as well.
So listening to their emotional body, what's the feelings that are there, really important?
It's energetic.
Uh-huh. And how do you listen to that?
It's a resonance. Uh-huh. When I'm present, I have a sense of their feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's an energetic... Yeah. It's like I know the brain stuff, mirror neuron stuff, yeah. But it's a being presence thing. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's the field together with them.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. So move, can you pass it to the front here?
So this is I think, kind of a listening skill, but in my company we employ this, but we also notice that when you're talking to someone over the phone, it's interesting to notice that when we're speaking with someone, if you have a smile on your face, something else comes across that's, you know, you don't hear, yes, but you detect. And so that's also a listening skill, is just speaking with a smile and also noticing when you're on the phone, hearing, you can tell when other people are in that space.
So, so listening to their smile, listening to their joy. But does your listening change if you're smiling?
it absolutely does. Yeah, I agree.
How do you have any sense of how it changes?
I think when we listen, you know, we're filtering all the time, and just having a smile on your face kind of affects your body, and I think it also affects your mindset. And so I think you're listening with maybe just a little more joy, or just that negative filter, the judgmental filter. I think when there's a smile on your face, it kind of it's in between that.
Yeah. And I think in certain circumstances, people are much more willing to open up, and because you feel like a friendly person if you're smiling. Though sometimes smiling is not appropriate. So you have to kind of... I've had to dampen down the smile. I'm happy to see someone who's smiling, and they come in and they say something tragic, and they're like, oh, I've got to... there's a wonderful man who's the chaplain... spiritual chaplain at San Sequoia named Tom Harshman. And he comes down and once a year and teaches for our chaplaincy group here. And he said that when he was first a chaplain, he got feedback from people, from other chaplains, other people, that he was, I forget exactly what he said, so what the word is, but so be careful, don't hold him to this word, but that he was kind of like too serious or too dour or something, you know, and he didn't feel that way, but somehow... He said, you have to smile occasionally. And so he went home and for a while practiced his smiling. And so he became much more fluent in smiling, or able to smile, or easy to smile. And in fact, I've known him now for many years, and he has a very infectious smile, and it's really wonderful to be around him because of his smile. And before I met him, if someone had said that they practiced their smiling, I wouldn't have trusted it. It's like what? You can kind of put on a smile for people. But now that I've met him, I feel it's genuine, completely genuine. And it's part of his gift in going around meeting people is in the appropriate time as he has his infectious smile. Someone else?
Well, there are two things that come to mind. One is... just the stress in the voice, the inflection, the way it rises and falls and volume and all those kinds of things convey a lot. So that's one thing. And the other you already mentioned, which is what is not said. Sometimes there'll be a conversation and there's an elephant in the room and people don't want to look at it or name it.
Great. Yes. Both those things are important.
Someone in the back.
Wait.
I try to listen for what people want.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's clear. Sometimes, they just really want to ramble on. Like you say, they just want someone to listen to them. Sometimes they want people to agree with them. When I can't hear what they want, I usually ask them. But I think... that's been very useful for me.
Yeah, what they want. What are they trying to accomplish in their speaking? Try to listen to that's good. So right in front of you, Alicia. What, you didn't see your hand?
Oh, no, I did. I guess I'll say something. So one thing that you said, Gil, that that resonated for me was when you said it's 50% paying attention to the person that you're with and 50% paying attention to what's stirring in you. And that's what I listen to is often I find out I'm there present with somebody. And then I notice that something that's actually changing in me. There's a reaction to maybe what their story is they're sharing. So I pay attention to that without leaving and being present for, I guess that maybe the word is allowing it to be there. And still being able to maybe self-manage so I can be present for that person.
Yes.
But noticing and taking note so maybe I can come back to that after I'm done with that conversation.
Great, that's wonderful. And I appreciate your language of self-management. Maybe that's better than my thing about self-control. Self-management seems but good.
Thank you.
People have habits in their voice, and we can change our habits, but it can be very difficult to listen to someone who has the habit of anger, for example, and you note that the tone is angry, but there's nothing in this conversation that's about anger.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way in smiling, we see people or talk to people who are smiling and have this gaiety, but their story is incredibly tragic that's coming out, and they're laughing about it as a habit and as a cover-up.
Could be, yes.
So there are many difficult parts of listening when there are lots of overlays on from the other side.
Yeah, I agree. And I think situations like that maybe it becomes more important to pay attention to yourself. Maybe then it should, sometimes it could be 75% for you, 25% the person, because the reaction is so strong. And so if someone is speaking in an angry way, maybe a lot of attention has to go on you so that you can work through, a person can work through their reaction and their clinging, their judgments around that. And so be able to continue to listen with the anger, angry voice or whatever, in an open, relaxed, clear way. I've had great conversations with people being angry with me, and just stayed very open and relaxed, and just kind of let it kind of come and receive it. And it's, you know, I hope all of you get the chance in your life someday to have someone who's angry with you, and just stay really, you know, open, respectful, listening, and just kind of let it come. Just don't have a stick anywhere. Just be there. It's a great thing to do. So you know, don't go making the opportunity, but if the opportunity comes, you kind of like, oh, here is my chance. Most people don't think of it that way.
So one of the things I listen for, both on the phone and in person, is where the person's breath is, whether it's up in their chest, whether it's down in their belly, what the pacing is. And that's a really good clue as to their emotional state and how they're relating to their own internal world.
Great. Breath is good. Breath is a big thing for ourselves, too. I pay attention to my breath a lot, and I notice the shifting of it, and it teaches me something about myself.
Exactly. And part of empathy is then sometimes matching that or bringing it down.
Yes. So then, Bruni, in the back.
One of the things I hear is the level of awareness with which the person is speaking and the level of awareness with what I'm listening. Meaning, is the person telling me about facts through the senses or thoughts, beliefs through thinking or emotions through feelings or desires, wishes through wanting, or actions through I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, and how I'm listening, what are my filters, because maybe I'm just listening, maybe I have a strength of noticing facts, but not noticing feelings.
Mm-hmm. Good. Maybe right in front of you, I saw a hand before.
Hi, I'm Jimmy. I also listened to bouncing off of the mirror neurons that were also mentioned. Sometimes I think I tend to feel what the other person is saying, and if they're complaining or they're angry, I'm going along with the story. So I have to listen to myself and say, you know, those aren't my feelings that I'm listening to. That's their feelings. I don't own those feelings, and create that separation in myself when I'm listening.
Mm-hmm. Great. Related to that, I think, to know how gullible you are. because I've had to watch myself in that way, because someone can come with a very compelling story, and it can seem like this is how what's really happened. But to be willing to kind of put a question mark behind it. But I've heard that person's point of view. Maybe there's a different point of view. And I've been surprised by how someone had a very, very compelling story. It seemed like it must have been happened that way. And then someone else provided a missing piece of the story that the first person just hadn't said. So how to listen respectfully and clearly, but then to be open to not necessarily take it as true, but still listen very respectfully, and maybe it could be true. But then be ready to, when you listen to someone else, to be listen in a fresh way and not hold the first story too tightly as you listen to the next party's point of view. I see a lot of hands. Maybe this can be the last one because it's time.
Okay, so this one has a little bit of humor in it. As a grief counselor, the core of what I do is just listen with a lot of compassion. And one thing that I think about is what happens when there are external distractions. So something incredibly priceless happened this week. And I was sitting with a woman who she's probably the most despairing grief client I have right now, who's married for 40 years and lost her husband. And week after week, you know, it's just heartbreaking. But she's healing by just talking. And for the last three sessions, and they're not always at the exact same time that I see her, right above the office, and the walls are very thin, there's been this rhythmic rocking that gets faster and faster and faster. I don't know if people know what I'm referring to, but what comes to mind is someone who's self-pleasuring. So here I am listening to this and trying, that's where my mind is going, wondering where her mind is going with all of this, and trying to, you know, put that in the background and really pay attention. So second time it happened, you know, she just kind of had this little gesture of, ooh, you know, and I just sort of chuckled. And then this week, it was, you know, she just couldn't contain herself. And, you know, she made some comments about what was literally happening, and then made gestures of what they were doing. And this is all conjecture, because we don't really know. So in those moments of us both being distracted over something that was so profound and serious of what we were, you know, the core of our communication, what really pulled it all together was humor, which was really extraordinary. Mm. So it is all about listening, and how do you manage internal, external distractions, and what happens in the relationship when those things occur.
So this so-called distraction, maybe in the humor or something about it, broke open the heart in some way?
Yeah, broke open the heart.
So that because she needed to communicate in a deeper way, and yes, that allowed for that.
Exactly.
So we do have a rhythmic problem here at IMC, some of you have probably heard. But the city's water meters, they're going to fix the meter on tomorrow morning. So those of you who have been hearing the sound, it's going to stop. We hope it's going to stop soon. And it's not people. Thank you all.